It's now time to think outside the box of what we've always known.
I myself will tend my sheep and have them lie down, declares the sovereign Lord.
I think that's a profound turning point in somebody's relationship with God.
And our hope in starting this was that this would become an ever-expanding conversation.
Just two real guys talking about life. That's a nice tagline.
Well, I'm Wayne Jacobson.
And I'm Brad Cummings.
And welcome to another edition of The God Journey. It's another beautiful day in sunny Southern California.
It's overcast.
I know.
You like it that way.
Yeah, I do love it this way, but it is.
He's a man of faith.
Whoa. Where did that come from?
There's someone in the studio.
Who is that guy?
Yes, Lord.
But yeah, no, it's been.
Well, I once introduced myself as the mouthpiece for the voice of God. You
know? Oh, wow. Yeah. How'd that go?
There was a lot of laughter.
Okay.
That voice you're hearing is the voice of Gail Irwin, a good friend of mine for a number of years, author of The Jesus Style and 14 other books or something
not
like that.
Not quite that many.
Not quite that many. Travels around the world playing his one-string guitar. He said.
That I do.
Just hope it's not the G string. I don't know. I don't know guitar strings at all.
He didn't like the way I hold it.
That's why you're on the cutting room floor.
I hope it doesn't go down from here.
Cheap shot. Wayne's in his thong over here.
I'm just trying to figure out what the...
What are we going to talk about today, huh?
No, I was going to ask folks to tell me a little about... I think a lot of my audience, unfortunately, doesn't know who you are.
They can still go to heaven without knowing who I am.
That's their hope, I'm sure. No, what do you mean by that? I think that's a great phrase. And it's
well, the thing I call the one-string guitar is I love to teach on the nature of Jesus, and really everything I teach flows out of that. So even if I'm taking what might be called a different subject, you're still going to hear a bit about the nature of Jesus because I interpret everything through that. So I call that my one string.
Which is the Jesus style. Is
exactly.
The style of ministry, life, leadership kind of thing. And it's not what people normally expect to hear, right?
That's true. That's true.
However, come on, guys.
However, what I find is no matter where I go, whatever country I'm in, whatever kind of cultural situation, when I teach on the nature of Jesus, being the servant-hearted, other-centered one, they instinctively know it's right. I never have to convince them that it's right. They just,
Of course.
Of course.
Why aren't we doing that?
Right.
The answer to that one is what?
Yeah, it's one of those compelling messages of the simplicity and the power of the life of Jesus, which wasn't a top-down, you know, it was came as a servant, came to serve, not be served.
Well, that's true. And one of the things I see about myself is that I sometimes think hopelessly self-centered. And the more I think about myself, really, the more miserable I become. It's axiomatic. If I can look at any of my moments of great misery and I'm thinking about myself and why is this happening to me and so forth.
Yeah.
But Jesus was the one truly other-centered one. And so that's a one-string guitar I play. And sometimes I think, could you give me another string? You're saying when you learn this one, we'll talk about it.
Right? So you can't play a chord yet, huh?
No chords yet.
No doubt. It's a great message and one you've taught all over the world. How well are we doing getting it? I mean, look at Christianity.
I'm not the judge of that. I don't know. If you're asking me how well I'm doing getting it, I'm still on my way. I have to confess that... I think about myself most of the time. In fact, I think you guys think about me most of the time, you know.
Oh, we do. All the time. Brad and I just can't stop talking about you. That's been our problem.
So it's a journey, but I enjoy it because it's not a journey of tension or a journey of will you ever get here, you know. It's a joyous one for me. It really is because I do know that he really does love me and puts up with me maybe, but it endows me with incredible peace and joy.
You can relax and enjoy the journey without worrying about the destination. Yeah. Or I'm getting it all.
And there was a time I worried about it. I remember when I was a teenager, you know, and I was in Standard Brand kind of church. And all of the sermons indicated that I wasn't going to make it. Nobody ever said to me, you'll probably make it. No, teenagers don't hear that story. At least they didn't back then. You guys are in trouble. So
when did things shift?
Well, they shifted actually when I became a pastor. And I had planned to be a medical doctor all my life, actually a brain surgeon. So be thankful.
If you need a brain surgeon, I'm not sure it's you on the one on the other end of that scalpel.
On the spot, right?
Yeah, let's do it.
But I guess one of the things that shaped my life immensely was the fact that my father, who was a wonderful man, a man of God, was severely injured in an airplane accident when I was 6 years old.
Wow.
Consequently, my mom had to become the breadwinner. He was basically disabled, brain damage, left side paralyzed. And my mom was not commercially skilled, so it actually plunged us into pretty deep poverty. My job was to take care of him, Dad. I had to pretty much go everywhere he went, you know. And if it wasn't at school, it was taking care of him. Yeah. 6, 7, 8 on through those years because mom had to make the living. Well, that changes a lot of things, and that's what made me want to become a medical doctor, really, because I thought, well, hey, I can do this. I'll keep on doing it. But in college, I began to see the basic hopelessness of those students. It hurt me to watch them in their feelings of misery, hoping they could somehow put together a few moments of fun at the end of the week. And that drove me to my knees. I don't know how else to put it. And in the course of that, I think I heard God say, well, you know, if you become a doctor, I'll bless you. I like those guys. But all you'll ever do is operate on somebody unconscious, you know. But if you really want to change things, I want you to preach. Okie dokie. Although I still operate on some unconscious people when I'm preaching.
Yeah, I was going to say, depending on the service.
He's a divine anesthesiologist now. Yeah,
yeah right.
So, do you get them when they're asleep or do you put them asleep?
Both. The number of emails I get from people saying, I go to sleep reading your book every night.
Oh, well, man, hey, right. We don't explain that, do you? I've had people tell me I put them to sleep listening to
Marvelous.
My, but anyway.
Soothing.
Soothing, that's it, at night. But in the course of being a pastor, I realized this isn't working. I mean, I cannot be what the cultural view of pastor demands of me. It just isn't me. And I was talking to the Lord. I said, you've picked the wrong guy. I got to give this up. And it's like I heard him say, well, where do you get your idea about what you're supposed to do? Well, I hear it from other guys and read books about it and so forth. Well, why don't you try looking into Scripture?
Oh, really?
That's a quaint thought.
Lord, are you sure?
But from the pulpit, I just decided, okay, I'm going to test it. I became a much more honest man and more one who identified with the people who were there rather than telling them how they should to change their lives and preaching at them. My approach was, well, let me tell you what God's working on with me. And suddenly they were identifying with me, and it changed everything for me. And that was just the real beginning. And then finally I saw his kingdom and his nature, and I've never been the same since. That's condensing it.
Okay.
That's a better condensing that you will ever hear in your life, let me tell you.
We just got the distilled essence.
You did.
We should get your wife in here. She probably would like to hear
that.
She'd take
a picture. Yeah. So, okay, you saw him and his kingdom. What do you mean by that?
Well, I came to the conclusion pretty early that the kingdom didn't look like the church as I had seen it. I was sharing with Wayne that the church that I served was 60 years old while I was there. We didn't celebrate it. We just took note of it. We had nothing to celebrate.
60 years.
In 60 years, I was pastor number 52.
Oh, wow.
Oh. And that helped me along the thought that, you know, maybe this is just an organization and not actually what the kingdom of God looks like. Not to say that the people themselves weren't, you know, people that loved God. But they certainly had not been taught anything about what the kingdom was like, I think, and about the nature of Jesus. Though I didn't really understand the nature of Jesus then, I began to see, you know, the kingdom of God really isn't some of the things. Well, you know, I guess one of the things that really devastated me is when I actually read Jesus who said, the things that are esteemed of men are an abomination to him. And I'm thinking, now that hurts. Man, are you all these things that I...
aiming down the wrong runway.
Oh, no.
Here, take your knife back.
And so often church is just built around things we esteem. We're going to have the biggest building. We're going to have... In fact, I love... You know, I'm a Deep South and Midwest guy, and there's something about that area. When they start a church, they start it like they're putting together a football team. We're going to have the best cheerleaders. We're going to have the finest people. We're going to whip all them other churches. And if you look
on the... Yeah, I didn't know we were competing, but yeah.
We're right. We are now, buddy. You know that? And I marveled at that, and I thought, they don't understand what the kingdom is about. You know, we're not competing with each other, I hope.
So what is the kingdom?
Well, it's the people that the king rules. Now, that was the thing that really put it together for me. It was when I saw the nature of Jesus, and he ends up saying to the disciples, and this is, to me, the authorized method of Christian leadership. He says, I'm your example. You should do as I have done. Jesus led by example, you know. He says, after in Matthew 20, he says, whoever wants to be great among you, let him be your servant. Whoever wants to be first, and boy, to be honest with you, great and first is right down my alley. But I don't like that other thing. That other thing he attached to it. Whoever wants to be great, let him be your servant. Whoever wants to be first, let him be your slave.
That's not the esteem part.
That's not. That is so different. And nothing confronted my flesh more than that. No, you know. But then he says something that just blew me away. Just as the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life for ransom for many. And so serving and giving is where the joy is at. He said, if you want to find your life, you have to lose it. And that's really what he's saying. If you want to really become everything you've always wanted to be and enjoy life to the fullest, the way you get there is by blessing others. Now, that's not natural. That's supernatural. The natural me is very self-centered.
Okay.
How old were you when you were making these discoveries? Would this be your mid-20s, 30s, 50s, 80s?
It would have been in the... Yes, honey.
You gave him some options there, Wade.
Sorry, I couldn't resist.
The understanding began to hit me along about 1970, 71, in there. I had helped some... The way it really hit, I had helped some university ministries get going, and they wanted to have sort of a celebration retreat before some of the original leaders were graduated. And so on the border of Oklahoma and Arkansas, at a Baptist campground that we had rented for that, we had these bunch of college kids. And on a Saturday afternoon, I'm talking about leadership, Christian leadership, and so forth. And a girl stops me, and she says, what do you mean by Christian leadership? I hear you guys talking about this all the time. And how's it different from any other kind of leadership? So I said, well, if we're going to call it Christian, we better get it from Jesus. So I started thinking of some things to put up there. And somebody said, you know, I bet his greatest in the kingdom teachings would help. And it was like the light bulb came on. And that afternoon, on that chalkboard, this was before whiteboards, we put together.
What's chalk?
Just before cars, too?
And we had our horses tied up outside. But on that chalkboard, we put together what was the core of the book, The Jesus Style, and the nature of Jesus. And it was one of those moments when I looked at that and I thought, here is the rest of my life. Because now that I know what the king is like, then suddenly everything in the kingdom
makes sense.
So that's simple as that.
So how do you go from being self-centered? Wrap it up.
We're done. Thank you for joining us today.
Right. Thank you. All clear now.
How do you go from being self-centered to other-centered?
Yeah.
Well, you know, you'll have to buy the package.
Oh, there you go. There's a real preacher. Yeah. Is it a monthly subscription or an annual? Is there discounts? What's the deal?
Well, for one thing, the more I stare at the nature of Jesus, the more he just does it in me. He really does. I wish that I could give you three or four nice and easy steps, but I can't because I don't know three or four nice and easy steps. I just keep staring at him and thinking, okay, now this is in you, Jesus, and it's good, and I like it. And every time you break through in my life and help me be a little bit that way, I have more fun than anybody in the world. So please keep working on me. It's his job. I don't have it in me to do it. I'll be honest with you. So I just have to keep authorizing him. Okay, God.
No, I think that's great.
You're hired.
I think what we behold, we do become. And I think the reality is I don't think a lot of us are necessarily staring at that.
Well, you know, Hebrews says, looking unto Jesus, or let us fix our eyes on Jesus, the author and the
finisher.
Oh, I love that word.
Me too.
Oh, man. Yeah. I keep wanting to finish it. And when I put my hands on it, it is finished.
That's not what he meant.
That's not what he meant. No.
Look what you did.
It didn't mean let me be the finisher. Let me finish it, not you. Well, you're in this position of quote unquote Christian leadership, and you're making discoveries that it's really different than what you thought it was. So as you begin to explain to other people what you now are discovering it to be, did they beat a path to your door and go, wow, this is the pastor we always wanted?
Not exactly.
Yeah.
The people, in a way, did beat a path to my door, but it wasn't.
collectors, yeah, no.
A different sort of path.
But here's the thing, I really discovered this, and it's become axiomatic in my own life. Leadership, even in Jesus' day, were deeply threatened by this message, and I became suspect.
Sure.
After I started saying these things, I could give you illustration after illustration of their proving how suspect I was, because they knew they weren't that, and yet they were in charge.
Right.
And so now people were expecting that, but they couldn't deliver it. And that chasm began to grow, and I realized, boy, my teaching this has created something that I'm not going to be able to handle. This is in your hands, God. Unfortunately, I guess, there have been a couple of churches that really weren't, that I can think of right offhand, that really were not into this nature of Jesus thing, but they were big churches. And I spoke on this, and it was like the people going, yeah. But they'd come up to me afterward, and they'd say, you know, this isn't taught here, and this isn't the way our leaders are. And I'm thinking, oh, I have just opened up a big can of worms for these people, because I'm dropping the bomb and getting out of the fallout area. And it split the churches, and I didn't intend to do that. And yet maybe it was a good thing, because some folks had seen, yeah, let's follow Jesus, and he's different from what we're hearing.
In almost everyone I've talked to, there have been various stages of this journey. They have this moment of really enlightenment about who Jesus might really be, just, and you know, not complete, but a glimpse. Or a glimpse of what the church could be. And they really just, and I was this way too, people will love this. This is what everybody's been looking for. And then you start talking about it and you find out, not so much.
Yeah.
That really, people aren't necessarily looking for a better mousetrap. They're very content with the one they've got. You've experienced that as well?
I have. Well, Jesus talks about it. You know, people aren't going to be excited about new wine. They're happy with the old and so forth. And I understand that. I spent years trying to turn an old wineskin into a new wineskin. You want me to show you the scars?
You know what I figured out? I don't know that he asked us to.
I don't think he did. I think he was trying to tell us something.
I made that mistake for quite a while. Yeah.
Oh, but well, of course, everywhere Jesus went, everything he taught, it started turmoils. The poor people, the common, the Amchares, if I say that right, heard him gladly. And the leaders, who represented no more than like 5%, the Pharisees, Sadducees, teachers of the law, even if you add the Zealots and the Herodians in, not more than 7%. Well, it became a power thing. That's what I've also discovered. They were threatened by Jesus because the crowds kept following him. And why would poor people hear him? Because he had really perfected eloquence? No, I think there was a personal relationship kind of thing going on there, in spite of it being a large crowd, that he was attractive. He was full of grace. That's, and we know that. The law came by Moses. Well, I grew up under Moses. But grace and truth by Jesus Christ. And John, in, there in the Baptist in 1 John keeps, or in John, the first chapter, it says, and we've all received blessing after blessing from him. Well, who I want to show up there, not over where I used to be.
Yeah, so, me too.
So it is attractive, and I marvel at the people who are responding to that message. I pray now that I've reached the age of 35, I'm sorry, 72, I hope that it continues on after I'm gone.
So how many countries in the world have you been labeled a heretic?
I had some dear friends at my house the other day, and they were. I had to walk out of our conversation for a little bit, and when I came back, they told me we were just talking about how you ought to write your autobiography, and I said, "Well, I already have a title." Oh no, fired again? No, I don't plan to write that. I don't have time for that.
I thought you were going to write your last one. It's going to be got one more story I want to tell you.
Well, I am working on that.
You're having a fun. You're a great storyteller. I mean, very engaged, hilarious to.
Well, you know what? The Bible tells us that Jesus never taught without using parables, and I figured, well, who am I to improve on that situation? He was a storyteller. My oldest son-in-law once said to me, he said, "I've been trying to figure out how you do this to us." I said, "Do what?" And he said, "Well, you keep our attention for one thing." He says, "And I've been observing the crowd. When you say, well, let me tell you a story, it's like our eyes glaze over. You have us right there in your pocket, you know."
Yeah.
I do like. And the thing is, God gives me the stories to tell. It's like every 10 years I live a full lifetime, and I think, this is incredible, man. The things that I've seen and he's let me experience, it has to be God just saying, okay, I'm giving you another set of stories because you've already printed those. Now you need
a new set.
You need a new set.
I've enjoyed our friendship. We met, gosh, probably
100 years ago,
17, 18 years ago, I think, and we, for a number of years.
No, I think it was longer than that. I really do. I think it was back in the 80s, mid-80s.
No, I didn't write Naked Church till 87, so it would have been.
Oh, okay.
I think it was early 90s,
yeah,
actually.
All right.
Actually, we've been having people, I've had people tell me for 2 or 3 years, "Do you know Gail Irwin?"
Yeah.
I'm going, "No, I don't know of him. I knew of your book, Jesus Style, but I didn't know him." And they said, "You guys need to meet." And
that's what they would say to me, you know.
Because we were teaching similar places behind each other.
Yeah, right.
And so we always thought, gosh.
No, they didn't say, "Do you know Gail Irwin?" They asked me, "Do you know Wayne Jacobs?"
I figured they figured you knew Gail Irwin. But anyway, and I think we'd even had some kind of correspondence or something. He said, "We need to meet sometime."
Possibly,
yeah.
Yeah.
And we just had never figured out. And then one day I walk in. I was still pastoring back in the old days in my former life. Mm-hmm. And I was walking into a prayer breakfast of some kind. And we had a speaker who was supposed to be there. And I was not looking forward to it at all. And walked in, and there's a guy standing in front of me with a Gail Irwin tag on his shirt. And I'm going, "The Gail Irwin?" Because there can't be too many people named Gail Irwin.
That's true.
But there are a few on Facebook, I found out when I looked for you.
That's true.
But, and I go, "The Gail Irwin?" And you look at my name tag, you go, "The Wayne Jacobson?" I'm going, "What are you doing here? You weren't supposed to be the speaker. You were subbed in at the last minute because somebody else had a medical emergency of some kind." And we got a chance to meet, and I have treasured the friendship ever since.
I have too.
We don't cross paths as often as I would like, but when we do, it's great fun. And I just had a desire last week to talk to Gail about some things that I'm going through. And I just called him up and got his voicemail and said, "Man, I'd love to connect sometime. If you get a moment, give me a phone call." And he actually called me back the next day and said, "I'm going to be in your area. Why don't we come by?" And so, man, within a few days, he's here overnight with his wife. And
yes,
had a great time last night just talking the night away.
We did.
And then we get a chance to put you on tape today. So,
if you remember, what was it when you met him that you just went, "Man, I got to know that guy"?
It's my looks.
Oh. Was that back in 1980?
Yeah, my former life.
It was mostly just his reputation. People have been telling me so many places for so long, "You need to meet Gail Irwin."
And they would say to me the same things about you.
And so it was more the excitement of just, gosh, I'd love to find out what we have in common. I read Jesus Style, and there was a lot of similarities, yeah, but I didn't know that we would. Some people, you read their book and you connect with them as a person, and it's just not much there.
Mm-hmm.
Gail was just fun to hang out with. I said, great storyteller. I think our hearts were so compatible with this journey. And early on, some of the difficult things said to me as I was transitioning my journey were said by this man in an incredibly loving way. But there were things that deeply touched my, and it, really when I was starting Lifestream and just starting to live my life a little differently, it was Gail who, you know, kind of walked me through how he does book publishing, people he worked with. I mean, there were so many very basic, simple things he shared with me that saved me years of the school of hard knocks, for which I'll always be grateful, because I have more hard knock schools that I need to go to. So I get to skip a few of them, it's all good. So even down to go here to get this book published, or, you know, I don't like this book cover, try this idea. And
that's right. We did have some pretty long conversations over that.
Plus, I remember telling him when I was pastoring and I'd speak four services on a Sunday morning, and I'd tell him how bored I'd get with my own sermon. So I would actually preach the same topic, but four different ways just to keep me. I said, I don't know how you do the same conversation every weekend and don't bore yourself to death. And he got that little twinkle in his eye, and he just said, oh, so ministry's still about you. And it was incredibly cool.
Oh,
to say.
Yeah.
Wow.
I want to apologize for that now.
No, that really worked in my life, because what he added on was this. He said, when you start to see people's lives changed by what we're doing, you don't care if you stand up every day and sing, Jesus loves me, this I know. And that really has become true. I am virtually in the same conversations every weekend of my life, whether it's people in our home or I'm on the road in New England or Austin, Texas or somewhere. I'm in these same conversations all the time with people, and they never get old. I mean, I love watching people's lights go on watching them go, see, I knew that. I didn't know I knew that, but I somewhere, like you say, you don't have to convince people who are have a heart for truth. They're already going, see, somehow I knew that, and I've been living against that. And it was really that moment was one of those things where he said, oh, so it's still about you. And really, it was embarrassing, because it really was about me, my vision, my goal, my what I want to do with my books, my speaking, my salary, my income, my. And it was just like a real little, you know, toss a cold water in your face. That sucks. Oh, we don't use that word.
No, we don't use it.
Pretty rough word for my daughter. She didn't like it.
I understand it. It's fine. Sorry.
So, I mean, that friendship began there, and then we occasionally get to cross paths. In fact, one time I was sitting in an airport waiting for a plane in Appleton, Wisconsin, and Gail Irwin walks in, and I'm by the window, and the sun's setting, so it's coming in the window, dead behind me. Gail Irwin, you old son of a gun! And he's looking through, I said son of a gun, he's looking through the whole deal. Who is that over there? He didn't know who I was, he couldn't see me.
I remember that.
So God's allowed us to cross paths. Every time I go through an airport, I think about that. I look for a couple of people. He's one of the guys I look for as I walk through airports. I just, maybe I'll pass Gail Irwin today. Yeah.
So when you guys go spend time with other groups, I know God probably personalizes this to that gathering, but in terms of a general desire that's coming out of your life to give as a gift to others, what are you looking to try to give away?
Well, I don't really change it, first of all. If I've got a group of junior hires, I teach the same thing as I do.
It's a one-string guitar, remember?
It's a one-string guitar. Yeah. Because I don't want to mess with that message. I really don't. I've seen its power. I know its power. And I trust the Lord using it. So I just hope that in any given group of people, at least maybe one to half a dozen will truly hear me and begin to ask the Lord to put that in effect in their lives, because I know that sometimes that's all it takes,
right,
just to get it started.
If you haven't heard Gail does the weekend, usually weekend things.
Yeah.
Oftentimes with folks. And the 17 things, is that right?
About no, it's 15, but if you know two more, I'd like to hear.
I haven't counted them recently, so I'm fine with 15. Yeah, it's 15 things. He just kind of works through about the nature of Jesus. And if people have not had a chance to hear that, I mean, there's video and audio on the internet, but it's always stuff's better live. If you ever find Gail Irwin hanging out in your area, even if you have to go to one of those traditional religious clubhouses to hear him, it's worth doing. It is really worth doing. You'll have a ball. He'll laugh you into truth. And I think that's what's most engaging about Gail. You laugh. People say, how'd you do that to us? He gets you laughing about the stories he tells, and then he just zings you with the truth in there, kind of like, oh, so it's still about you, that kind of stuff. And you're like, oh, crud, I think that's an arrow in my quiver. or in my liver.
You're basically unveiling the personality of Jesus to people.
That puts it pretty well.
Yeah.
And his teaching, of course, he taught by example, but he was the servant. See, he doesn't say, you know, I really don't have time to do this, but I'll teach you about it when I'm gone. You can do it. No, he did it. He showed them how. And he knew it was going to take a long time because the apostles were such worthless guys. It's really embarrassing. And I would have fired them if I were their employer, but he never did. And I have also, by that, come to understand that this whole process of becoming other-centered and servant-hearted is a long one, really.
Yeah.
And he kept teaching, and they kept fighting, and he would patiently teach them one more time. They fought at what we call the Last Supper over who was the greatest. I mean, after at least 3 years of teaching on this, some think four, they fought still again. And he patiently taught them.
Well, I think it's the love of God that's the only thing that sort of displaces my love of self.
Yeah, you know? I can understand
like,
that.
It's like I don't somehow know how to get rid of my selfishness other than I feel like when God unveils his love of me to me, then I somehow let go of the grip of what I'm trying to get for me.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when all of a sudden life really does start to shift and become other-centered, where it's like, oh, I get that.
Yeah, well, if he loves you that much, you don't have to mess with yourself anymore, see? That's the beautiful thing. That's what grace does. The forgiveness that he gives us, okay, man, I'm free now. I don't have to give time to myself.
Yeah.
And it becomes that. But Jesus himself, you know, when one of these guys asked him, what's the big commandment? Well, the Shema, love God with everything you got. And a second one is just like it, love your neighbor as yourself. And he says, on these two commandments hang all the law and the prophets. In other words, that's what the Bible's all about.
At least that's what the Old Covenant's about.
What?
At least that's what the Old Covenant's
about. But still, in a way, it's still true, just we love God. Because he loves us.
Yeah.
We can't generate love for God. It has to be
a reaction to it. That's what I like about Jesus, the John 13. We were talking about this last night. Jesus saying, a new command I give you. Yeah. What he changes now is, no, love doesn't begin with you. I think that's the old, what the new covenant does to the old is say, yeah, it's still about learning to love God, but now the love will come from him.
Right.
As you've been loved, then love.
Right.
And I really like that as a better new covenant commandment.
Okay, I stand corrected.
No, I'm just saying. We've talked about that a lot here. As people are going to go, I wonder if Wayne's going to say anything.
Yeah.
I'm just going to because we can do that. But. And the other thing I love about my relationship with Gail is that God's really called him to be in much more traditional settings. Like he talks about helping people come alive and some things about Jesus that they've been hearing about for years but maybe haven't really connected to. And often in environments where we can talk what we want about servant leadership, but leadership is mostly top-down in most of the places that we create by man's deal. And God's asked me to walk in a bit of a different place with people who have kind of been disaffected from some of that, still passionate for Jesus, still love him, still want to sort out how do I find life, body life, relational life with God outside some of those structures. So it's fun to me when people talk about, you know, my generosity to people, you know, people wish I'd really come out against the system and just beat it to death and all the people in it. And I just go, you know, there's people there that God loves too. And there's people there that come alive in God. And so I'm content wherever people are, if they're discovering who God is, then they'll become, and this I want to talk about with you, because we said this would be a neat topic to kind of fall into today last night. You said last night, the more we know that we're loved by God, the more we'll recognize how people manipulate us.
Yeah.
Talk about that a little more and how that.
Well, I know that when I'm being manipulated, I recognize it more the moment I really began to see the nature of Jesus, because I could tell when people were not treating me out of that nature. It's really phenomenal how you, it's like the great glasses to look through. But also, at the same time.
This is the downside.
Oh, well, yeah. I could tell when I was mistreating people and was not being that way toward them. And then I started just sort of looking at the way I have been manipulated in the past. And man, some awesome. I can tell stories all day about that. And then embarrassingly, how I too have manipulated people.
Absolutely.
And I think, if I could just go back to some people I knew 40 years ago, 50 years ago, and apologize to them for being that kind of leader, so to speak, or using them, really, for my own purposes.
Getting them to do your will?
Right.
We were taught that. You know, a leader is a man of vision, and he gets people to serve that vision. And
right.
It just is so ubiquitous that it's almost uncontested anymore.
That's true.
Instead of, no, that's not why leadership exists in the family. Leadership exists in the family to help people be all that Jesus wants them to
exactly.
be.
Exactly.
Very different.
Well, another thing that came along, I realized that I got more of my understanding of how to live from my culture than from Jesus. You know, I was much more of an American than I was a Christian. Now, I don't even use that word. I use a follower of Jesus.
Well, even the religious culture. It wouldn't just be the world culture.
The religious culture. But our religious culture does its best to match bigger and better, you know, and man.
Yeah, it's pretty sick.
And sorry we ran over you on the way, but that's tough.
Yeah, you shouldn't have been in the way to begin with.
But the times that I have listened to pastors who were just such controllers, and I would look, I'd keep my mouth shut. I wouldn't say anything about it because they hadn't authorized me to. And if I go into a place, I wish I could, in many places, I wish he would authorize me to talk to the worship leader, or I wish he would authorize me to talk to him. A few do. They actually do. They say, well, what have you observed, you know? And I'll be honest with them. I'll tell them what I see and so forth. But there are places I sure wish they had authorized me to, because it was anything other than an example kind of place. And people were to be moved rather than to be ministered to. And whenever you decide my success depends on how much I move people, you're gonna manipulate them.
Absolutely.
So what do you do when you recognize that someone is trying to manipulate you? How do you deal with that?
I resist. I've learned the word no. It's a wonderful
no,
no, because I used to feel like if somebody wants me to do something, I'm a Christian. I'm duty bound to do it. But I realized too that if I do what a manipulator asks me to do, I'm making him sicker. I'm turning him into more of a manipulator. Hey, it worked. It worked on Irwin. So I'm teaching them that manipulation is the way to go. So I've learned some words that help, you know, when I will say, you know, I'm really uncomfortable with that because I really don't know what the loving thing is to do. So I'm going to have to say no. And that way I'm not accusing them of manipulating. Right. I'm taking the responsibility on myself. I don't know what to do. So I'm going to say no.
You must love this quote by Oswald Sanders. I don't know if you've ever heard it. I am your servant, but you are not my master.
Hey, that's good. Would you write that down for me now?
No, I don't know. You never heard that quote before?
I haven't.
I love that quote because it really says, I'm going to live as a servant.
It's amazing what I don't know.
But the servant thing doesn't mean I do whatever you want me to do. Right. It means I've got a listening ear to Jesus, and I really want to serve his work in you and his work in the world, not necessarily be bossed around and be a doormat for everybody who wants to walk on you.
I put it in a way this way, that as a servant and a follower of Jesus, I give up all rights to do anything except what is right and best for you. And sometimes, you know, that might be abrasive. I might say, so it's all about you or something like that. But at least...
Talk about, for a little bit, because I know other-centeredness and servant, but talk about, what do you share about the otherness of Jesus, the other-centered life as, you know, what do you talk about there?
Any area that you want to pick, he had the opportunity. This, I think, is in Luke chapter 2, 3, 4, somewhere right in there. Man, the crowds were big. They were responding to him. And Jesus goes out. He often would do this, especially at the time of his greatest successes. See, I tend to do my heaviest praying at the time of my greatest trials. But when he was most successful, that's when he'd get out there and start praying. Because that's really the most dangerous time. And the apostles were really wanting him to stay and start a church, so to speak. And he says, no, I have all these other literally hick towns I've got to go to and preach the gospel. So that was he didn't do anything for himself, even his angers. Now, God put me through on that. I'd sometimes say, well, when I'd get angry, well, Jesus got angry too. The Lord said, why don't you check that out, Gail? And I discovered that my angers were always in behalf of myself, and somebody got in my way. But then I looked and I found out that Jesus always got angry in behalf of others, all the difference in the world. And so I began to pray, Lord, help me not to get angry until you are, you know. Hmm. But that his angers were even in behalf of others. Yeah, awesome to me.
Someone shot an arrow into my heart years ago. They said, your anger shows who you serve.
Ah.
And so in the context of what you're talking about.
That's a good way to put it, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's like, most of my anger was not really righteous indignation on behalf of the Lord's holiness. It was more like, on behalf of my desired outcome, you're not doing what I want.
Oh.
And that was a real one to come to grips with, to just go like, golly. Because at the time, I was an angry young man.
Mm.
And I thought justifiably so, because things hadn't turned out the way I wanted.
Well, I'm going to give you hope. You can, if the world continues, you'll end up being an angry old man too. I mean, anger. Anger is just.
Oh, good.
I feel so empowered.
Oh, wow, I've arrived.
There is never a shortage of situations where people will make you angry. You know, but the Lord helps you not. You recognize that after a while. It doesn't mean that you don't get angry, but it doesn't do to you what it used to do, and you find yourself actually thinking, now, I got angry at them, but how could I have really served them or blessed them or something? And boy, that makes a big difference. Doesn't mean you always do it, because anger has this, well, it creates energy in you, you know, for one thing. I had some dear friends that whenever they would have a spat, he would have to deal with the energy it created, and he'd go out and mow the lawn. And boy, they had the best lawn in the city, you know. And if you heard him mowing a lawn, and it was a good lawn, you knew they've got a talk coming up.
You know, it's so strange how, especially around baseball season, it's almost as if, you know. Anger is a tool that the world is trying to say, use that towards your strength.
Exactly.
And you just go like, I listen to that and I just go like, you know what? I think you're well-intentioned, but oh no, you're just driving a profoundly unhelpful rut into the lives of little kids, where you're just going like, anger is not the source of my strength.
Right. My stomach is so turned by the ads for this wrestling thing that goes on, and they really magnify anger and attacking each other verbally and so forth, and people cheer it on. It's like we're getting back to the big
gladiator days.
You know?
This is where Yoda was right, really. We said fear leads to anger, anger leads to hate, and hate leads to the dark side. And I think that's probably pretty true.
Gospel according to Yoda.
Yeah. But you find some
I'm
hope.
I'm thinking.
Are you sorting that out? Let me go over again. Fear leads to anger. Anger leads to
okay,
hate.
Okay, okay.
I find those things to have been true in my life, and hopefully decreasingly true, as I think the other-centeredness, living inside the nature of Jesus and who he is, I do think real change takes place. And like you said, you become more free. Never, not about never, but not yet completely free. It is a journey. It is a process, for sure.
I speak of a time in my life in which I hated a couple of people, and you know, you hate to admit that, but it was true. And at first, I schemed the things that I thought God should do to them, and.
And you could find David actually praying those prayers.
So David would. In fact, when you don't forgive somebody, you go back to the Psalms. You live there, because there's some really good things.
There's some good praying back there if you hate people.
But finally, I couldn't take it. Because when you don't forgive somebody, they rule your life. You just think about them when you don't want to think about them.
Even when they're not there.
Yeah, right. And so I finally kind of accidentally read where Jesus said, love your enemies. What? Do good to them, you know. Bless
What's
them,
that
not
say
hate
in
them,
the
you know.
Greek?
Pray for them. Yeah, right. Got to say something differently. But that staggered me. It's amazing how you read the scripture and you don't read the scripture. But you see it at the proper time. And I knew I had to pray for these guys. Well, my first praying was a bit immature, you know. God, you said vengeance was yours. You would repay.
So get
them, yeah. And then I realized, no, I have, if I'm reading this right, I need to pray for them the kind of prayer that I would pray for myself, that I would want prayed for myself. Man, did that begin to change. I began to pray for the Lord to really bless them and prosper them, you know, and do good things. And the thing is, God did. But it was a family kind of situation, and it brought about, I mean, most of all, it changed me, because I found out after I'd prayed for them, that kind of an honest prayer for a while, not only did I not hate them, I actually loved those guys. And I thought, that's God. That is absolutely God. Well, it brought about the most phenomenal family reconciliation that could only have come from God. So there are still in my life individuals who would just as soon that I be dead, you know, and I'm not talking about my wife.
I can vouch for that.
Yeah, right. But I can remember as a pastor, I'd have people come and saying, we hate you and we're praying that God will kill you, you know. And I'm
we're praying Ananias and Sapphira.
Love you with the love of the Lord there, right. Brother.
Well, and so how do you handle that? Well, I've learned, man, Lord, bless them so much that they don't even think about me. And then I let it go.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah. Well, thanks for joining us today. We're kind of at the end of
our
time.
Oh, is this through?
Sorry
about
my. That. Yeah, we could keep you on and do another one if you want. But if they want to track more of you, it's servant.org. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Is the website. Servant Quarters is kind of your deal.
Yeah.
Which is cool. Lots of video, audio there to listen to, things to read. So that's how they can get hold of you. Anything else you want to say before we...
Well, it sure has been fun with you guys. I love this kind of thing.
Okay. Well, maybe we'll hold
And finally, good to meet you, Brad. You're an all right guy, actually,
Thank
in spite
you.
Of
oh. In spite of what I've said about him. What do you say?
Thank you for traveling with us on The God Journey. You can be part of the conversation by visiting our website, thegodjourney.com.